Welcome this morning to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry. I use the pronouns she and her, and it is my delight to seek to serve this justice-seeking congregation. And I want to let you know that every person is welcome here. You are welcome no matter how you identify your gender, who you love, your immigration status, the color of your skin. Everyone is welcome here, including those who are going to celebrate the national holiday of the Super Bowl, those who have no idea who's even playing, those like me who have no idea who's playing, but we're still having the food and turning on the show. Everyone is welcome. So I want to especially invite people who are here for the first time or been here a couple of times. We have visitor information cards in the front, in the seats right in front of you, and that's how you can find out all the things that are happening in this congregation. We have many activities during the week that bring us together in community and study and action. I also want to let you know that there is coffee downstairs after the service. And if you're online, I want to welcome you and let you know that there is a chance to gather after the service on Zoom and talk about the service and your lives. And, one thing about coffee is we're doing coffee and hot chocolate and tea in two different areas because it's been pretty crowded down there. And so we want to make sure that everybody can get what they want in a timely fashion. And so now we are going to greet each other. And this morning, what we're going to do is we're going to share one thing you love about living in the Portland area. And I want you to talk to more than one person and talk to someone you do not know. Stay risen, everybody. We're going to sing number 38, Morning is Broken. Stay standing, stay standing. Morning is Broken, number 38. I would like to invite Avery up to light the chalice. Is Avery going to come forward and light the chalice? There she is. Yay. Good morning. So we're going to light the chalice this morning, the symbol of our faith, for all the love and beauty in the world and how much it brings joy, to our hearts. Let us say our affirmation together. Open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our hearts to love ourselves and our neighbors. And put him in the army where he rode around on a warship. He hated the warship, so he tried to escape. They grabbed him back and they locked him up in the bottom of the ship. The slave ship went to Africa, stole people, brought them to Jamaica. They sold them into slavery in Jamaica and then filled the bottoms of the ship with rum and cotton and tobacco and coffee, and then went to England, sold it for a profit, and went back to Africa. And so John was put on one of these ships to help. But again, he was such a difficult person that they sold him into slavery into Africa, where he worked, where he was the slave of an African princess for a number of years. Fortunately, his father tried to find him, and he was rescued. He began the slave trade. But one day, they were sailing back from the New World back to England. And there was a huge storm. I mean, it was a massive storm with whirling winds, and the waves were crashing over the top of the boat. The big masts were breaking and falling into the ocean. And the people on that ship were bailing water as fast as they could to stay alive. Pray. And he began to pray fervently. And the storm ended, and they barely made it into a port in Ireland. And when John walked off onto dry land, his heart opened just a bit. But it didn't stop him from working in the slave trade. He became a captain, and he began also to take that triangular trip. But he did decide that he should treat the Africans they stole slightly better than they had been before. And so he gave them more room. He let them up on deck more often, fed them more food, which he did for a couple of years. And then one day, his heart opened just a bit wider. And he looked at the people in the holds and was like, oh my goodness, these are people just like me. What am I doing? And he called to his sailors, he was a captain by this time, and told them to turn around and take their prisoners back to Africa. And he went home to England, where he continued to pray, and he became a pastor. And he began to work with all his heart to end the slave trade. He published pamphlets and other materials to try to attempt to sway the heart of the British people. And when he was 85, in 1807, England abolished the slave trade. He, as a pastor, loved to write hymns, and what for his congregation. And one day he wrote this hymn that really expressed deeply from his heart how wretched and horrible he felt about his years working in the slave trade, and how grateful he was for God's grace to return him to a loving and moral life. And the hymn that he wrote is Amazing Grace, and it is a hymn that we sing with love to this very day, and we will sing it now.
Amen.
those in the congregation can stand and put your hands as an ark across the aisle for our children. Our love as we go, as you pour our rain.
This is the time in our service when we pause to reflect on all the blessings and the gifts that we've received from this earth, from our neighbors, from our families, and the generous spirit of this, our beloved community. To consider today, what is it that we feel grateful for? Our WOOF community thrives because of the generous spirit of all the people around you. Reflecting on gratitude can often inspire us to be generous with what we have to offer and to share with our WOOF community. I'm feeling especially grateful today for the music of the choristers and this place where we can come to worship freely. For the hours of practice and preparation and energy that everybody contributes to our services, we're so grateful and thank you. As Ben plays our musical interlude, please consider how you have benefited from being here at WOOF and what you would like to offer our community as well, whether it be financial support, your time, your energy, your ideas. Know that we all benefit and are grateful for your generosity. The hosts may now come forward to receive our offerings. Join me now in our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful
for what we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all of those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we can learn from the generosity of others.
It is now time to share our joys and our sorrows. The world is full of so much joy and so much beauty and so much love and care for one another. It is also full of incredible suffering, of fear, of pain, of tragedy. And in our human lives, we hold both, weaving them together, finding joy in times of sorrow, remembering in times of sorrow that there is always joy. And so we hold both in our community of care. And we ask people to come forward and drop a stone into the water, which represents our community and the way we hold for each other all of the truth about life. And so I would like today, we're experimenting because we just have one aisle with how to do this well. And so what I would like to invite people to do is we're going to have the front row begin, and we would like to invite you to stand when it's your row's turn. That allows people who are far to easily come out versus crawling over everyone's laps, so which is awkward. And so so we will ask the first row to stand and come forward, and when they're done, have the second row stand and come forward. One after another. You should be able to see when it's your turn. That's the idea. And for people in the choristers, we would invite you to do the same thing. So let us actually start with the choristers. And I'm going to hold the mic. And if you want to share a sentence or so about what's on your heart, that's welcome. And if you just want to drop a stone in silence, that is welcome as well. So is there anyone here who would like to come forward?
I had a stress dream last night, preparing a lesson to teach my students about the recent U.S. invasion of Canada. And I was struck when I woke up that even in this nightmare, the people I was with were wonderful and so supportive.
I'm glad to have my brother here today, and I'm also as ill, and I'm getting better. Thank you.
My stepdaughter here in town is in labor with her first child today.
Right now.
Sorrow for the anxiety and uncertainty that people who are paying their student loans are feeling at this moment.
This is for my dear, dear brother, a good, good brother who died recently.
This is for all the immigrants. My heart just breaks. I was a bilingual teacher for 32 years, and I've been hearing that bilingual schools, as many as like almost half the children aren't coming to school because their families are afraid. And for all the immigrant farm workers who pick our food, and for all the immigrant workers, the construction industry is having lots of trouble now because all the immigrant workers are hiding. They're just terrified. My heart goes out to them.
First row? Second row? Okay, can we have people stand? Oh, we got that? Okay, third row?
My mom passed a couple of days after Thanksgiving, and that's been really tough. It was the parent who cared about me and coming to realization with family and what those relationships are now. And in good news, my fiance and I, after lots of searching, months and months, finally found the right venue and set a date for August.
So third row? Okay.
I'm very happy to be here and to see all you here and to hear the choir. Wonderful.
Fourth row? If people could stand and let people out, that would be lovely. Thank you.
also grateful for the safe space for my children where other places are not safe.
This is for all the transgender youth who don't have care at the moment.
I'm grateful for new friends at my age. It's not that easy.
This is for my sister from another mister. Happy birthday.
The next row. The next row can go as well.
My partner and I just moved our 5 kids into a new home in your community, which is what brought us here. And although the teenagers are experiencing a bit of suffering, it's mostly joyful.
The next row.
And yet we still exist.
The next row can come. The next row can come. Yeah.
Close family member of mine who's struggling with really bad depression and loss right now.
The last pros can come forward.
This is for a very dear friend of ours who passed away last Sunday. He had late stage multiple sclerosis. He'd been paralyzed for 35 years. He had so much joy in his heart, you'd never know that he was sick. He was a saint, and I'm a better person. We're both better people for knowing him.
People in the back can come forward.
This is for all the people who have medical care but can't get access to their medications due to insurance companies. Hang in there.
I don't even know what to say, but I'm just asking for all of your good thoughts and prayers, okay?
This is for my toe. It may be gone, but I'm going strong.
And I like put in one last stone for all the people in our world who are suffering.
Glory, glory, glory.
we enter into our time of meditation and reflection and prayer, I invite you to reflect on these words. When the world you knew falls, like the Twin Towers, a blazing cone of fire that crumbles and collapses in on itself, and you are stunned with horror, fear, and grief. This is the time to breathe. Remember, the earth holds you close. Remember, each breath intertwines you with trees and lilacs. Exploding stars are our warm sun. And dear earth, the true power, they made life. All life, with its tangled, messy destinies. Breathe life, breathe itself alive. So breathe. Feel the ground hold you firm. Let the pain flow through until you are ready for the next right thing. Let us breathe.
The choristers are going to sing one of my favorite hymns this morning, A Balm in Gilead. This hymn soothes my nerves when they are jangled, which has been a lot of the time recently. In the Old Testament, Gilead was known for a particular healing balm, as well as excellent physicians. The prophet Jeremiah, in the Old Testament, in a time of great suffering for his people, called out, "Is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no physicians there? So why has the healing of my dear people not come about?" This cry feels truthful, both now and across history. Why has the healing of my dear people not come about? Howard Thurman, a minister and civil rights activist, writes of Jeremiah, "Not only is he discouraged by external events, but he is also spiritually depressed and tortured." Jeremiah is actually saying, there must be a balm in Gilead. It cannot be that there is no balm in Gilead. Thurman continues in language we no longer use. The slave caught the mood of this spiritual dilemma, and with it did an amazing thing. He straightened the question mark in Jeremiah's sentence into an exclamation point. There is a balm in Gilead. Here is a note of creative triumph. There is a balm in Gilead. What hope for enslaved people. But we rarely, if ever, sing this hymn here. The chorus includes the words, "You can tell the love of Jesus and say he died for all." This line makes many Unitarian Universalists flinch. Very few of us believed that Jesus died for us and then dismissed the whole hymn. We forget how healing this hymn has been for many people in our personal quest to only sing and hear what meets our own religious sensibilities. Yes. The idea that Jesus died to atone sin has been used to control people. But the suffering of Jesus has also helped those who suffer because they feel kinship with a God who truly understands their own suffering. It also offers a balm for those with deep regrets for the harm they have caused, including people like John Newton. But that Jesus died for people's sins and alleviates suffering is not the only way that Jesus' voluntary death is interpreted. Jesus' ministry was fundamentally about struggling against the powerful while offering love and care to people who suffered. Typically, humans respond to the use of power and violence with power and violence. When hurt and afraid, people hurt other people. This pull to violence and power is the great human sin. When Jesus chose not to fight those who betrayed and condemned him, he broke the cycle of violence by not fighting back. Through this courageous act, he ignited a religious movement based on communal love and care that continues in so many versions of Christianity 2,000 years later. The stories of Jesus' life and death gave enslaved Black Americans hope and courage in the very worst of times. Now, during Black History Month, let's appreciate the beauty of this hymn and how it has given hope to so many people.
a reading by Right Reverend Mary Ann Aker Betty, Episcopal Bishop in Washington, D.C. Let me make one final plea, Mr. President. Millions have put their trust in you, and you told the nation yesterday you have felt the providential hand of God, a loving God. In the name of our God, I ask you to have mercy upon the people in our country who are scared now. There are transgender children in both Republican and Democratic families who fear for their lives. And the people who pick our crops and clean our office buildings, who labor in our poultry farms and meat packing plants, who wash the dishes after we eat in restaurants and work the night shift in hospitals. They may not be citizens or have the proper documentation, but the vast majority of immigrants are not criminals. They pay taxes and are good neighbors. They are faithful members of our churches, mosques and synagogues, gurdwara and temples. Have mercy, Mr. President, on those in our communities whose children fear that their parents will be taken away. Help those who are fleeing war zones and persecution in their own lands to find compassion and welcome here. Our God teaches us that we are to be merciful to the stranger, for we were once strangers in this land.
On January 6th, 2021, Americans supporting Donald Trump violently broke into the U.S. Capitol and invoked Jesus Christ on the floor of the House of Representatives. Christian nationalism had announced itself loudly, publicly, and violently. Christian nationalism has grown over the last 40 years from a conservative, charismatic movement into a powerful political force. But hardly anyone noticed this was happening, including journalists and other observers of religious and public life. When noticed at all, most Americans dismissed it as a fringe movement of the slightly crazed and easily duped. But at the same time, many people were finding in the movement an expression of their sense of a world gone wrong and a compelling story of how to make it right. They became the foundation of MAGA. And instead of being taken seriously, again, they were scorned. Left-leaning Americans laughed as YouTube comedians mocked the nonsensical beliefs of followers. But still they grew. One-third of Americans believe all or the majority of these Christian nationalist tenets: that the United States should declare America a Christian nation. U.S. laws should be based on Christian values, as they interpret them. That if the U.S. moves away from our Christian foundations, we will not have a country anymore. Being a Christian is a truly important part of being an American. And God called Christians to exercise dominion over all areas of human society. These are the core Christian nationalist beliefs. However, the movement has a variety of expressions and theologies. Some don't even call themselves Christian nationalist. But many of them are genuinely terrified. They believe secular liberals are threatening their families with incredible harm. The fear can be so intense that many believe liberals have been overtaken by demons who have no other goal than to destroy their families. In a book called The Unhumans, endorsed by J.D. Vance, political opponents are unhumans who must be crushed. Others believe that the United States has a special place in God's plan for the entire earth. In this view, only two nations have ever been created by God specifically for God's purpose. The first was Israel. The second is the United States. They believe those anointed by God need to be in charge in order to bring about God's global plan. They call the new world they are building the kingdom of God, and evil impedes the progress toward the kingdom of God. They are fighting a holy war, and they must destroy the secular government in order to bring about the kingdom. And by this, they mean democracy and the legal rights of individuals enshrined in the U.S. Constitution. They seek a United States ruled by white Christians, mostly men. These authoritarians will make moral decisions for everyone, including declaring that gender will be assigned at birth and everyone will be a heterosexual. Abortion will be illegal and women will stay home and have babies. They already think immigrants, people of color, and non-Christians are not real Americans, and so they will be treated accordingly. While Christian nationalists wield the symbols of Christianity, they do not follow the teachings of Jesus, where he tells his followers to care for those who suffer and to love one neighbors as oneself. They do not express the Christianity of John Newton, or enslaved people, or the abolitionists, or Martin Luther King Jr., or Mother Teresa, and so many other people we never hear about who day after day devote their lives to creating a world of love and justice modeled by Jesus. If you forget everything I say this morning, please remember this, that Christian nationalists do not represent most of the world's ideas about what being Christian means. To say that their ideology represents Christianity is both wrong and it is unhelpful. It is Christians, both liberal and conservative, who are on the front lines trying to stop the growth and power of Christian nationalism. This includes the courageous Marianne Edgar Buddy, as well as Catholic, Episcopal, Baptist, Evangelical, and other interfaith organizations. It is essential that we do not dismiss the important work they are doing by condemning them in the same breath that we denounce Christian nationalism. Christian nationalism is not a religious movement. It is a political movement. By this I mean that their goals are vast political changes and the crushing of democracy, individual rights, and pluralism. It is not a grassroots movement. Far-right theologians and leaders have spent decades planning how to start a theocracy in the United States. And they are smart and they are strategic. They backed Trump not because he represents their values, because they believe he is anointed by God to take down the federal government and implement their priorities. They provided him with the majority of votes he needed to win the election, and their priorities are front and central in the new administration. oppressing trans people and immigrants, ending DEI, foreign aid, the Department of Education, science funding, and the overall destruction of the federal government are top goals of Christian nationalists. This week, President Trump signed an executive order to take action against all anti-Christian discrimination and violence. Paula White, a leader in the Christian nationalist movement, who is now the head of the White House Office of Faith, will help implement this executive order. Many observers see this as a move, as a way to begin prioritizing the Christian nationalist vision of America over the rights of other Americans to express their own religious beliefs or their non-religious beliefs. Meanwhile, Christian Vaught, who was confirmed this week as the head of the Office of Budget Management, Peter Hegseth, the head of the Department of Defense, and J.D. Vance identify as Christian nationalists or vocalize its tenets. Unfortunately, there is a very odd major media silence about the movement, and these people are rarely identified as Christian nationalists. Neither is Paula White. Christian nationalists made a deal with the uber wealthy. Under their theocracy, they agreed that in unregulated capitalism, where capital would have complete freedom to make more capital at the expense of every other value and the rights of everyone else, including the planet. But the oligarchs would need to back their move towards theocracy. Thus, millionaires and billionaires paid for Christian nationalist conferences, strategic planning, a vast media campaign filled with lies, voter drives, and other methods to bring the faithful together, build power, and grow the movement. Christian nationalists don't only work at the federal level. They have been successfully transforming states like Florida, Texas, and Idaho to their vision of the kingdom of God. Books have been banned and school boards taken over. In one community, they closed the library. In another, a large Christian nationalist church, I kid you not, pays for the police force and trains the teachers. Right here in Tigard lives Jennifer Donnelly, who is considered one of the best organizers of women within Christian nationalism, rallying them to vote for Trump. She tells her followers to run for local office in order to protect their children from woke ideology and LGBTQI people. She has said she wants to transform the Portland region to her ideology, and we should not underestimate her power. It might be really nice to pretend that this will go away in the next election or the courts will save us from the worst. But Christian nationalists are both afraid and in a holy war against evil. And these are powerful, motivating forces. This is not a casual movement, and they are committed to the long haul. As far as the courts go, they have spent decades working to appoint judges that share their views, including in the Supreme Court, where two judges have flown Christian nationalist flags outside their homes. Doesn't this whole thing sound like a conspiracy theory that should just be ignored? It is like a badly written dystopia. Especially the part about believing liberals are demons and Trump was anointed by God. How can anyone actually believe this? Which is why I think it's not covered. Well, it's starting to be covered, but it wasn't covered up till recently in the press. And I'm sorry to say that all of this is well documented by journalists, academic researchers, and Christians who have experienced the hijacking of their faith up front and personal. And of course, the clearest evidence that this is true is that every day we watch as the administration does what seems to us like one crazy, wild thing after another, but makes perfect sense when you know the Christian nationalist agenda. Earlier I said that many Christian nationalists are terrified for themselves and their families. And I suspect that you might be similarly terrified at this point. But don't be. This is not a hopeless struggle at all. But it is indeed very, very serious. And we must not ignore it. 2/3 of Americans do not want this. If we organize, we can still have a society based on justice, democracy, the care of people, and the earth. Unitarian Universalists, as religious people, have an important role in this effort. But first, we need to learn more. The movement is complex, and I have given you only the briefest overview. We cannot respond effectively to what we do not understand. 2, we must build coalitions with the many Christians from liberal to conservative who are working very hard to pull people back to the heart of their faith, which is the teachings of Jesus. Our faith is a descendant of Christianity, and we share many values, making us important allies. One reason that Christian nationalism is so powerful is they built coalitions across differences of practice and theology. On the left, we often shatter in the face of difference. And we have to get over this. No one can confront Christian nationalism alone. 3. We need to learn the skills to have conversations with family and friends and others who have these views. No one is one thing. Every person is complex. And hearts and minds hold many things. And there is a lot of information about how to have these conversations in a way that does not alienate loved ones. If there is enough interest, we could perhaps start a practice circle here. Let me know if this would be helpful to you. 4, in the struggles for control of school districts, cities, and counties, we need to show up and ensure people who value love, justice, and freedom get elected and implement policies that affirm the worth and dignity of every single child. Christian nationalists are well organized and committed to taking control of school boards and local government. If we don't want them to, we have to be committed to. These strategies mean bringing our voice as religious people to the public square. It is not uncommon for UUs to feel that this is terribly inappropriate. But speaking our values to shape a pluralistic society is appropriate. And it is important. Doing this does not mean crushing others to our will, like Christian nationalists want to do. It does mean working thoughtfully, representing our values as we find common ground and create a society that works well for all. Unitarian Universalists believe in love and justice, the rights of every person to be who they are, that every person should be able to eat, be housed, have health care, and practice their religious faith or no religious faith at all. All Americans need to understand there are other religious visions for our country that are life-giving and that matter. People cannot know our vision for the beloved community unless we tell them what our vision is. Only when it is known can people find the same kind of purpose and meaning so many have found in Christian nationalism. The United States has always been fertile soil for growing Christian nationalist movements. Slave owners used this language to justify slave owning. So did the Ku Klux Klan during the first Jim Crow era, and so did McCarthy in the 1950s. But every time, people pushed back, bending the arc of the universe toward justice. During the civil rights movement, people saying, "Ain't nobody gonna turn me around," let anybody turn us around.
If you know this freedom song, or even if you don't and feel compelled to jump in and sing, please sing with us.
Marching up to freedom land.
forth, good people, into the day, and keep on marching to the freedom land. Nobody's going to turn us around. We will have the front turn towards the back and the back towards the front, and we will sing our final hymn, Carry the Flame.